further humanitarian assistance to the besieged territory. And also in our headlines, the leader of Hezbollah says Israel is paying a high price in its war with the resistance in Gaza and Lebanon, but is trying to hide its losses. Our top story for this half hour, Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip is now in its 160th day, with the regime pounding the blockaded territory with more airstrikes and artillery fire. Israel's latest strike hit an UNRWA aid distribution center in the southern city of Rafah, leaving 5 Palestinians dead. Israeli forces also opened fire on a group of Palestinians waiting for aid in northern Gaza, killing at least 6 people and injuring over 80 others. A regime air raid targeting a house in Jabalia refugee camp killed at least 1 civilian, leaving several others injured. In Rafah, 2 civilians were killed and some others injured after Israeli forces bombed their vehicle. Gaza Health Ministry says nearly 31,300 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed so far in the Israeli genocide since early October of last year. Over 73,000 others have also been injured. The U.S.-Israeli campaign of killing and destruction against Gaza continues, adding miseries to Palestinians even during the holy month of Ramadan. People in 8 starved Gaza are forced to break their fast in the rubbles of their bombed-out homes.
Last Ramadan was great, but this year it isn't. A lot of things are not there anymore. My sisters, my family, our house got destroyed. There are still people under the rubble, and they're still not pulled out. This house was the children's dream. Their toys and everything is lost. There is nothing that we can offer to the children. No food or meat or anything that they need. We only eat soup and canned food, a can of beans. We are tired of canned food, and we get sick because of it. My son keeps telling me that his stomach is hurting him because of canned food. We have canned meat that even cats cannot eat. There is no place that I can go to. There is no shelter, no school. There are many diseases that are spreading in schools. And I was worried about my children, so I said we come back here to the house where I used to live and where I had a dream, and where my children also had a dream, but it became a rubble.
Last Ramadan, I had all my neighbors and loved ones over. We used to sit and spend nights together. But this year, there are no neighbors or loved ones. They're not here anymore. It's only me and the children left, sitting here, and we don't know what will happen to us.
A vessel loaded with food aid is gradually heading toward Gaza amid growing calls to deal with dire humanitarian conditions in the besieged Palestinian Strip. The vessel sent by a Spanish NGO is towing a barge with 200 tons of food aid. It set sail from a port in Cyprus on Tuesday. Meanwhile, Cypriot foreign minister said a second aid ship with a bigger capacity is being prepared in Larnaca port. Israel's bombardment and ground offensive has reduced much of Gaza's infrastructure to rubble. The onslaught continues unabated. On Wednesday, the main UN aid agency in Gaza said an Israeli strike hit one of its warehouses in the southern city of Rafah, killing at least one staff member. The dire food shortages causing malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza have already claimed 27 lives, most of them women and children, or rather most of them being children. International aid agencies say the current aid entry cannot address the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza. We were earlier joined by journalist and activist Khalid Barakat, who shared with us his perspectives on a Gaza-bound humanitarian aid ship.
Well, the problem with these initiatives is that it comes as a replacement of ending the siege and opening the crossings, which is what the Palestinians want. They want to see Rafah crossing, Kerem Abu Salem, and other crossing open. There are thousands and thousands of trucks full of aid and waiting to enter, but Israel is refusing to do that. And at the same time, the Europeans, the Americans, and some of even NGOs are complicit in this. They want to show that we can starve you to death, and at the same time, they want to keep Palestinians, in need of aid. And today, for example, the United Nations have met with Palestinian heads of tribes in Gaza, and they have listened to a unanimous United Palestinian positions that people in Gaza support the resistance. Any aid that comes to Gaza has to be in coordination with the Palestinian resistance. And on the ground, I mean, if the resistance doesn't want any of these vessels to enter Gaza, they are able to do so. But the resistance has been very careful in terms of looking at these initiatives. So they are being also very realistic because they understand that people have reached in reality a starvation. I mean, people are dying of starvation, and this is because of U.S. position. United States is responsible for starving the Palestinian people in Gaza.
Israeli forces have carried out new raids on several cities and towns across the occupied West Bank. A number of Palestinians were abducted from Ariha, where Israeli military had blocked all entrances with heavy troop deployment before raiding the city and two refugee camps there. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to give us more details.
Unfortunately, Israeli forces are raiding Palestinian areas day and night. At this time, the Israeli forces stormed the refugee camps of Ain al-Sultan and Aqba al-Jabal in Ariha, and they arrested at least four Palestinians from the area. And up till the moment, the Israeli military is sending more soldiers to deploy at the entrances of the city of Ariha. It's not clear why, because when the Israelis started their genocide on the Gaza Strip, the city of Ariha and the refugee camps had been completely closed for several weeks, and Palestinians were not able to enter or to leave the city and its refugee camps. It's not clear why the Israeli military is sending more soldiers to deploy at the entrances of the city. However, the operation is still going on in Ain al-Sultan refugee camp in Ariha. In Qalandia refugee camp, the Israeli forces stormed the outskirts of the refugee camp, and there have been reports of exchange of fire between Palestinians and Israeli forces that continued for at least 2 hours at midnight. And the same thing happened. Israeli military sent more reinforcements around the refugee camp of Qalandia. We have to mention that the refugee camp of Qalandia is located to the south of Ramallah city, and at the same time it's adjacent to the Israeli military checkpoint of Qalandia that Palestinians usually use in order to enter Al-Quds.
The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Israel is incurring significant losses in terms of military personnel in Gaza, and Lebanon and its army is worn out and tired on all fronts.
Israeli soldiers, this is a very tired army, and let us just see that they are exhausted. It's not just to say that there's, of course, there's hunger in Gaza, there's destruction of homes, destruction of buildings. This is just one part, but there's another part as well. The numbers of Israeli soldiers killed or wounded is a huge number, and there is a unity that the numbers are much higher than what the Israeli army is actually announcing. Some are saying 3 times, some saying 4 times the number.
Speaking in a televised speech, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah noted that Israel is covering up its military losses and is experiencing a severe shortage of soldiers. He said the regime has resorted to recruiting thousands of people, even from the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community. Nasrallah said in the Northern Front, the regime is imposing strict censorship on information about its losses in terms of soldiers, military vehicles, and other assets. The Hezbollah leader noted that senior Israeli experts and former ministers have admitted to strategic and economic losses that the regime is suffering. Nasser also commented on the United States' support for the regime, urging Washington to halt the Israeli aggression instead of helping it. Regarding the conflict in Gaza, Nasser said, "The regime has lost the war as it has failed to achieve its declared objectives, including eradication of Hamas." When it comes to the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu is somewhat the poster boy for Israeli politics. His premiership, however, has been heavily criticized on a variety of fronts, putting him at odds not only with the Israeli population, but even Israel's closest allies, like the U.S. Some have even gone as far as saying his policies have put Israel at risk, like the U.S.-Israel genocidal war. When it comes to the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's known these days not for his successes, but rather for his failures. He's failed at many endeavors that he's undertaken, and as a result, perhaps like no other time, Israel finds itself facing not only an existential threat from the outside, but also from within as well. Going into the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was already on a weak footing. He'd already lost three elections, forcing him into a coalition with extreme far-right politicians with extreme ideas, like the judicial reforms, which led to some of the biggest demonstrations Israel has ever witnessed, and actions against Palestinians like Al-Aqsa Mosque desecrations and administrative detentions. Moving on to what was described as the worst intelligence failure in Israel's history, and quite rightly so, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood exposed Israel's weakness on many fronts. Some of those intelligence failures included underestimating Hamas's capabilities and Hamas's intentions, overestimating the effectiveness of Israel's security services, and disregarding its own intelligence warnings. The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war waged against Palestinians had two goals, yet Netanyahu and his regime forces have failed in achieving any of them. For one, the goal of eradicating Hamas remains as elusive as ever. The Israeli regime has actually lost 350 of its own forces, though that number is believed to be a lot higher. The other failure, the release of the captives out of the 136 remaining ones, 52 were killed as a result of Israel's continued bombardments. And as a matter of fact, on Hamas, a recent annual threat assessment compiling U.S. intelligence has warned that Israel will be challenged by Hamas for many years. It said that Israel probably will face lingering armed resistance from Hamas for years to come. And the Israeli military will struggle to neutralize Hamas's underground infrastructure, which allows insurgents to hide, regain strength, and surprise Israeli forces. That's, of course, quoting that report. The push by Netanyahu to continue the genocidal war with the support for the U.S. has eroded Israel's international standing in a big way. One way that is evident is through the boycott campaign, which has seen many countries, in particular the Muslim countries, to boycott name brands like Coca-Cola, Starbucks, and McDonald's, leading to massive layoffs and loss of income. Another more visible move, large-scale anti-Israel protests, which have happened in almost all corners of the world on a weekly basis in some countries. And even Israel's strongest backer, the U.S. President Joe Biden, has said, who is a fervent Zionist, is realizing how the U.S. is slowly becoming collateral damage to Netanyahu's belligerent policies. The U.S. president has accused Netanyahu of harming Israel more than benefiting it due to innocent lives being lost, warning Israel's prime minister that an invasion of Rafah would be a red line, and to go as far as saying this could spell a U.S. policy shift against Israel. Israel's economy is also on a downward spiral due to Netanyahu's insistence to continuing the aggression. Israel's GDP has suffered a negative 20% contraction, with accounts so far for the loss of between $51 billion to $100 billion. credit ratings agency Moody's has downgraded Israel's credit rating, while Israel is having a labor force crisis unable to fill vacancies in key sectors like construction, agriculture, and, of course, the key tech sector. The U.S. Intel report we mentioned earlier points to other failures by Prime Minister Netanyahu, which may point to his time in office as being limited. The report said the mass civilian casualties have hindered efforts for Israel's normalization with Arab countries, like Saudi Arabia in particular. It said that distrust in Netanyahu and protests demanding his resignation will persist well after the aggression is over, which may lead him to leaving office. And finally, Israel's genocidal actions against Palestinians in this genocidal war led by Prime Minister Netanyahu couldn't be more on display when it was brought before a court of justice. The International Court of Justice cited Israel's multiple violations like genocide, occupation, settlements, movement restrictions, and illegal detentions. It even went as far as questioning the legality of the Israeli regime on occupied Palestinian land. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Gaza kids. Explosion? Whose home was destroyed? Do you know the owner of the house? Are they familiar to you? Anyway, they are a human, just like you. You know, after every explosion, a kid starts shivering like hell and never gets back to the person he was before. Listen, the destiny of the people in this land has been interwoven with the children's cries for 75 years. Look at that mother. The mother who is pressing her dead child to her chest. And over there, a father is standing on the rubble of his hopes. Here's just a smell of blood and gunpowder. Do you know how terrible the smell of burnt soil, the traces of blood everywhere, homelessness, darkness, starvation, and thirst is? A mother moans, a father screams, and a kid is no longer laughing. I'll narrate them. I will narrate the wounds which need time to heal. And the resistance will guarantee a bright future for them, for sure.
Gaza Vibes.
Come on, Khalil. Take a stretcher. Hurry up. Take him to the hospital. He's badly bleeding. Hey man, be resistant, okay? Doctor, we don't have anesthesia. We've run out of the medications. Be resistant. You're young. You have to live a long life, okay?
We have to amputate his legs.
He can't stay alive without anesthesia, Doctor.
We have no other choice. We have to rush. He has lost much blood.
We're running out of emergency electricity.
Just hurry up.
His oxygen level is decreasing and his heart rate is going up. We have to rush. We're losing him. We need defibrillators. One, two, three. Again. One, two, three. Once again. One, two, three. Oh, we lost him.
Come on, let's go. We have been injured outside.
I'm coming. We've run out of anesthesia and medications. What can we do? Doctor, there is a bullet in his back. Suppose he's no more than 8 years old. Hey, boy, be patient. Aha, oxygen. We need oxygen. He lost his consciousness, but has pulse. Oh, God, help him. Oh, God. We don't know what to do. It's a genocide against us. Genocide against Palestinian children and innocent people. Mohammed, we have no choice. Let the injured lie down on the corridor's floor. I have to go to Ashifa Hospital. The Zionists have struck the hospital and so many injured are left. Take me to Ashifa Hospital. We have to bring some of the injured to our hospital. Just hurry up. Look at the streets. The Zionists have destroyed everything. May God help our people. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Stop here. The road is closed. Continue the way on foot. Take the injured to the hospital. Just hurry up. Oh, God. The hospital is struck. No water, no food, no electricity, no fuel. People had just come to the hospital to get sheltered. Why did they kill them? Why is the world silent towards such heinous crimes? There is an ambulance at the end of the alley. Carry the injured to the car. Adnan, we have to go to Al Auda Hospital tomorrow. Children are malnourished and need care. In just 10 days. Nothing can justify the Zionist brutishness. Oh, they even hit the ambulances which carry the injured with rockets. Many of the hospital personnel have been murdered in such attacks. My friends, my colleagues, my family. As you look at the city from the roof of the hospital, you see a catastrophe. Oh. Respiratory infections are raging through Gaza. The premature babies are dying in hospitals because the electricity is cut off. And children are dying one by one because of starvation and dehydration. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel. Hasbunallah wa ni'mal wakeel.
this program is dedicated to the martyrs of Gaza.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The U.S. Israeli genocidal war is setting records. In addition to dropping one of the largest volumes of bombs and munitions on the civilian population, which has been compared to the nuclear bomb that the U.S. dropped in Hiroshima, the UN has said that the number of children killed during the first 4 months of the war has topped all those killed in 4 years of wars across the globe. In this edition of the program, we will look at how the U.S. and its allies are looking to give off the impression of doing a good deed with airdropping food or delivering aid to Gaza, while rifts between the U.S. President Joe Biden and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu are widening over the aggression overall. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Sud Nimr is a professor of political science at Birzeit University who joins us from Ramallah. Also joining us is Sam Parker, political activist who ran against Mitt Romney for the U.S. Senate, joining us from Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to you both. Sud Nimr, first over to you. This is a very shocking and grim stat coming from Philippe Lazzarini. I'm sure you heard of him, the Commissioner General of UNRWA, War on Children. He said a war on their childhood and their future. The number of children reported killed in just over 4 months is higher than the number of children killed in 4 years of wars around the world combined. What's your impression of what he has said?
We know that what was going on in Gaza, this aggression against Gaza, it's a genocide. It's not even a war like any other war, because the Israelis, they don't have any intelligence about what's going on in Gaza underground. And since they lack of information, what they are doing is just these bombardments. And definitely, when you are talking about 2.2 million people living in a very small area, not more than 365 square kilometers, then definitely there will be a very high casualty among the civilians. And since Palestinians in general, whether in Gaza or in the West Bank and in Jerusalem, 52% of our population are under 18 years old. So we are talking about 52% of our population are children. So wherever you hit, definitely half of the casualties will be children, and definitely the others will be also women. So women and children so far are more than 70% of the casualties in this aggression or genocide. So because of that, definitely the number of children, we are talking about more than 12,000 so far of children were killed because of these bombardments. That's not to mention those who were severely injured and those who became handicapped because of limbs being cut off or hands, right, or legs or these kind of things, in addition to the last numbers of children who are dying because of hunger.
Taking a look at the stat that you just heard, I'm wondering what you think about this, Sam Parker. When there are two things that stand out here, just as recent as a few weeks ago, the U.S. was reported to send weapons to Israel amid this invasion threat in the Rafah area. And this planned delivery of bombs and other munitions comes also on the heels of another report that came out by the Washington Post, if you heard about those, contracts that were hidden, not revealed, where, again, bombs and munitions were sent, which has contributed to this number of children that have been killed in the Gaza Strip. What do you think about the U.S. administration and the assistance that they've given to the Israeli regime militarily?
Yeah, that's a good question. I appreciate you having me on. But absolutely, it's very duplicitous, and obviously it's a lot of optics, and it's a PR stunt essentially. I have a picture saved on my computer that I saw a few days ago that was circulating online of the parachute airdrop of the food with bombs blowing up buildings in the background in Gaza. In the same picture, U.S. Food pallets drifting down out of the sky and bombs falling and blowing up buildings and people. So we're the United States is engaged in doing both things and playing both sides, but really they're just playing one side. They're playing the Israel side because they've been sending all kinds of bombs and munitions over to Israel to drop on Gaza and to use in this conflict. It's not a war, right? This is not a war. People are calling it a war, but it's not a war because Gaza doesn't have armed forces, so to speak. It doesn't have tanks and planes and attack helicopters and armored personnel carriers and infantry and Marines and all these things. It's not a conventional war. It's mostly just 2.2 million civilians just getting bombed from here to there and everywhere by the most modern weaponry known to mankind. And the United States has been covertly sending this without the knowledge of Congress, circumventing Congress without congressional approval. And now to sort of save face, to curry favor with their voter base, and to not look so bad on the international stage, they're doing these stunts like dropping a couple truckloads worth of food that really don't amount to much. The first airdrop only had 38,000 meals, which if you think about it, 38,000 meals, how does that begin to feed a population of 2.2 million people who are literally now starving to death? The latest figures I've heard are about 600,000 Gazans are at catastrophic levels of starvation right now. And so a couple truckloads of aid delivered, that's just a PR stunt, especially when, as you pointed out, it's being done at the same time that we're sending just truckloads of bombs and munitions, and many of them in secret. So it's duplicitous. It's just a PR stunt. And I think it signals an unseriousness from the Biden administration.
Sad Nimberberg just talked about this food drops that have occurred, how minimal they are. It's quite mind-boggling when you think about what he said, where you have the food drops and you have bombs in the background that are blowing up buildings that have civilians inside of it. I mean, one has to scratch their head and say, what can we do? What can be done? There's not a phone call that you can make because obviously this genocide continues. But then you have the other side, another ally as a whole, the EU, who although has critiqued Israel, they have come out with a maritime food corridor. I don't know, have you seen that barge that's carrying what is said to be 200 tons of aid? That doesn't look like it even holds thousands of Palestinians. Why are they doing this when such minimal amounts of food going to the strip in the first place, and B, when you have the crossings that have trucks waiting there to go inside the strip? What's the deal there?
Yes, I do agree with your guest from Utah that it is a PR thing, because we know that in Gaza we have five crossings for goods between Israel and the Gaza Strip. We are talking about Kisufim, Sofa, and Karni, apart from Rafah crossing with Egypt, and apart from Erez, which is also for personnel. But for goods, there are four other crossings between Israel and Gaza Strip. So if the Americans and other Arab countries and some European countries can drop and have the agreement of Israel to drop some of the goods by air, I think they should, force them or agree with them to open the crossings and to get in all the goods normally, as it used to be before the 7th of October. Before the 7th of October, we were talking about 500 trucks or shipments coming to Gaza every day. Now we are talking about only 100 and only through Rafah. So it's absolutely absurd. So it's a PR thing. It's not nothing more than that. And then the American came with this brilliant idea about, making a kind of a port into Gaza, and they ordered the military to do it. It needs something like 3 months to be established. 3 months. What will happen to the people who are starving now in 3 months' time? This is, I think, also, it is because the Israeli, they don't want the UNRWA to be involved. And this is part of the war on the UNRWA. So now they are talking about alternative organizations to deliver the aid to the Palestinians. And they want to, you know, ignore the UNRWA because, from their point of view, the UNRWA is helping the Palestinian resistance, which is not true at all. And it's we know the aim by the Israeli, sure, why they are targeting the UNRWA, because it is the organization that is keeping the right for the Palestinians to return to their land, and that's why they have this war against it. And the Americans are involved in that. When they just, you know, cut all the aid to the UNRWA just lately, and during Trump era also, right, they did that before.
Okay.
It's targeting the UNRWA.
Yeah, we could talk about the logistics and how ridiculous it sounds, thinking that this is going to work better than the land routes, which UN has said that, Sam Parker, that land routes are obviously the way to go. But we got to move on to another topic of this U.S. military assessment that came out, this Intel report, just very recent. And I'm going to combine two issues into one. One, it said Hamas, Israel probably will face lingered armed resistance from Hamas for years to come. And then you have, on another note, how Israeli regime forces suffering defeat on the battlefield. There's plans to lift military service exemption of these ultra-Orthodox Jews. Do you think that they are losing that on the battlefield? And combined with this report, that is one thing they want to do, is to keep feeding the regime forces side of things in order to continue the genocide?
Well, it certainly looks that way. And I saw the protests from these Orthodox Jews in Israel that erupted last week, where they were blocking highways for several hours at a time. And you had conflict, physical conflict going on between Israeli police officers and the Orthodox protesters. And this is an idea that's been building for the last month or two inside of Israel. I think Itamar Ben-Gvir has been pushing for this. He hasn't wanted to make it a force of law yet, but they've absolutely been pushing this idea of drafting these people into the service who have traditionally been exempted. So that does signal that they are short on manpower, that they do want to prolong this conflict. And I think, you know, going back to the last topic of this aid package that's coming from Europe through the maritime corridor, that's, I guess, going to be delivered onto this temporary pier that the United States is constructing. It's going to take 2 months to build that pier, minimum. And so that signals right there, that's a soft signal that this assault on Gaza is going to last at least for another couple months, even though you have Benjamin Netanyahu saying maybe 4, maybe 6 weeks, but the United States is counting on at least 2 months. So,
do you think that's by design? I'm sorry to jump in. Do you think they've designed it that way in order to have that 2 months or 3 months maybe for Israel to be able to do its military maneuvers on the ground?
Absolutely. I think they're giving cover to Israel. There's no question about it. Look, Benny Gantz, one of, you know, the leader of the opposition party, the National Unity Party, who is thought of as one of the major rivals to Benjamin Netanyahu, made a visit to Washington, D.C. last week, basically with the coordination of the Biden administration to help the Biden administration politically to take heat off of them, but also to signal that they still support Israel, but take heat off of their relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu and put forward a positive, you know, we're just against terrorism in general, and we support Israel. So I think there are a lot of political moves being made. This is a PR stunt. And some have even suggested that this pier will become a permanent pier that Israel will use once they completely take over Gaza once and for all. So I do think that this is a stunt because, as you said, as has been said by the other guest, there's 5 crossings into Gaza already with food trucks ready to go. It doesn't make any sense.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right, this U.S. military intel report said needs a little bit more opening up. And one of the things it has said is the fact that there's distrust on Netanyahu by the masses, Israeli masses, and that the protests are going to swell up even after the genocidal war ends, and they're going to demand Netanyahu's resignation, and that may actually force him to leave office. Do you believe that Netanyahu is on his last legs?
Okay. I think that, yes, Netanyahu is facing really a big problem now inside Israel. Last week, there was a poll conducted in Israel, and most of the population in Israel, for 53% of those who were conducted in the poll, they said that we believe now that Netanyahu is making the war now going on and on for his own personal reasons, not for the sake of Israel. Otherwise, he should agree to the deal to release the prisoners captive by the Palestinian resistance, but he's doing that for his own personal issues, knowing that he's going after that to the to face the court and maybe also prison, but definitely not being a prime minister anymore after Gantz being even welcomed in America, and that was really make Netanyahu very, very angry with that, because now the Americans are dealing with Gantz as the next prime minister in Israel. Now, in Israel itself, there are now, and it's unprecedented, it's for the very first time ever in a war in Israel that you see this fragmentation in the Israeli society. A part of that is the families of the captive prisoners in Gaza. On the other hand, you have people of especially the mothers and families of the soldiers killed in Gaza, and the numbers are really very high, though the Israelis are not announcing it quite right. And they are demanding that we don't want our children to be killed now in Gaza anymore. Mm-hmm. And also, you have another pressure coming from those who were removed from north of Palestine because of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and those who removed from the south of Palestine because of the aggression on Gaza. So sure. Now you are talking about lots of problems that Netanyahu is facing, and all these are elements of pressure on Netanyahu. So yeah, I believe that he had to finish this job by the end of the day, because there is lots of pressure coming from other countries and from the Americans. The problem with Netanyahu, my last sentence, the problem with Netanyahu, if he go to a ceasefire, he's admitting the defeat of Israel for the second time in this aggression.
Interesting point you make there. Sam Parker, the rift between Bibi and Biden, is it real? Is it deep? Is it as bad as these red lines for Rafah, where Biden has put it out there, taken it back, but put it out there again? That they're on a collision course. I mean, even there's this, again, intel report that's saying a senior Israeli official on the condition of anonymity revealing that the U.S. is actually seeking to oust the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Are we looking at what is being reported to be real when it comes to the two?
There may be a rift between the administration and Netanyahu, but I don't think that there's a fundamental rift between the U.S. administration and Israel itself and the and its current policies and its current warmongering. I don't think there's a rift there. I don't think that the United States is going to stand in the way of what Israel wants to do. Now, Netanyahu has become is starting to become more of a political liability. Look, in Israel, like the other guest just said, he's deeply unpopular. He was already unpopular before October 7th. There were massive protests out in the streets of Jerusalem. Some say that Israel was even on the brink of civil war. And since then, they blame Netanyahu for the debacle of October 7th. They blame him for the death of these hostages. They're furious with him that he won't negotiate to bring the hostages home. And that they know that Israel has likely killed some of their own hostages. So he's even more unpopular than he was before, and he was deeply unpopular before. It's just that, in the middle of a war, it's hard to make, a change like that. So I don't think that there is a red line. I think that politically, this is hurting the Joe Biden administration, and it's hurting his reelection campaign. And I think that any rhetoric that seeks to diminish Benjamin Netanyahu or to, to put forth any idea of a red line is really to serve his base that is mad at him for supporting a genocide. And so I think it's going toward his reelection campaign. I don't think it shifts a fundamental change. I don't think it signals a fundamental shift in U.S. policy towards helping Israel do what it wants to do. Look, this we just said this pier, it's going to take 2 months. That gives Israel cover it needs to the cover it needs for at least the next couple or 3 months. So sure. I think it's mostly rhetoric and to take heat off him for his reelection campaign.
Well, Saad Nimr, the U.S. President Joe Biden was very sure and confident that there would be a ceasefire. He even announced the day of the week, Monday, a few days prior to Ramadan. We saw that didn't happen. Now, one of the reasons was the insistence by Hamas to have a permanent ceasefire. It did not want a temporary one. What's wrong with that? Why should that have been one of the thorny issues that some are saying that led to the ceasefire not to happen?
Yeah, well, let's put it just, bluntly like this. What they wanted Hamas to deliver all the prisoners, to give them back, and which is the only card in their hands, Hamas, and then they will continue the war. So what's the purpose then? Definitely Hamas is not going to give all these 134 prisoners that they have for only a ceasefire. And when they deliver them, the Israeli will continue and resume the killing and the war against Gaza. So definitely they will insist on a ceasefire. And there is a huge understanding anyway among all those who are involved in this negotiation with that. And they believe that there should be a ceasefire. The problem here is the Netanyahu himself. Now, for the Americans, yes, I do agree with Sam. When we are talking about the deep state in the United States, definitely they are going to back up Israel and always will support Israel. But sometimes you have between the administration and the government in Israel some problems. And we saw that also during Obama. So it might happen like that. But it is not that deep rift in the relationship, which would make Biden force Israel to do something they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. We know that Biden can, in half an hour, order Israel to stop the war, and they will stop it. Otherwise, we won't give you anything. So if they want to do it, they can do it. But they are involved, and they are still going on with Israel in this war. So this pressure by Biden to achieve a kind of a ceasefire before Ramadan, okay, it failed. And who failed it was Netanyahu, because he insisted and he withdrew his delegation from Egypt in the last moment, and he don't want to continue negotiations.
Sure.
And he's blaming Hamas. So, yeah, we think it's not that much of negotiations anyway, since they are sticking to their opinion.
1 minute. We keep hearing about how the U.S. can pick up the phone, Sam Parker, and tell the war, the onslaught to stop. We hear that a lot. But we don't hear the fact that the U.S., with all the military assistance it's given, has not been able to help Israel win the onslaught. Why do you think that is? Less than a minute, please.
Well, I think the goal hasn't been to quote-unquote win, because I think Israel wants that land and it wants to move the people off the land. It also wants to have exact retribution and revenge for what happened on October 7th. And so they're starving these people. They're collectively punishing them. They're systematically destroying all civilizational infrastructure, hospitals, schools, mosques, churches, apartments, homes, everything, roads. There's nothing left in many parts of Gaza. So they're not fighting a war. They're not fighting a conventional war where we're trying to beat the enemy and take out its enemy force, so much as that they're trying to clear out the land, ethnically cleanse them, and take it over. That's been their goal. And so I think while they project the idea of winning.
Thank you very much, Sam Parker, political activist, ran against Mitt Romney for the U.S. Senate, Salt Lake City, Utah. Saad Nimr, a pleasure. Professor of Political Science, Brzezinski University from Ramallah. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Batawe and the team, it's goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi'a al-risala.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabihit tuja wa a'lamit tuqa wa dawin nuha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select,